I think Hillary would have been a good president too, but I think
I still think
But and I think she would have been a better president than Bernie by like a whole lot.
Yeah, I mean,
I agree with you as well.
Most likely.
Yeah.
Can we talk about that now? Can I get my engine?
Giving you the transition. I was throwing the ball up for you.
Potentially.
Yeah.
I'm still not necessarily in the camp that all of the extreme social measures need to happen.
What up, world?
Ow.
Toss them sticks.
Welcome
to
the 106th episode of the Amera Podcast.
Right.
Hell yeah, it is.
We have everybody here with us this evening. Everybody, Tyler. Tyler out in California. He's back from his top secret mission.
I'm back.
Hello, sir.
I'm back from...
We missed you.
You know, I missed the last episode because I listened to it because I actually, you know, I don't do this just for the jokes and the own satisfaction of hearing other people hear my voice. I actually care, you know. And so I went back and I listened to the other episode and I was sorry to miss it because there were some things I would have loved to have added. So I'm glad to be here.
Well, Tyler, you will have the opportunity to get those words in this episode.
Like I said, it's all about hearing myself, so it's great news.
And out here in Colorado with me, we have the Johns. Kelly, Mr. John Kelly in Denver. How are you, sir?
Great. Just great.
Fantastic.
You look great. You look great.
We got some interesting stuff to discuss tonight, really. I feel like... we may not have had too many uppers, like up shows in the last couple of weeks, months,
years,
but this one's
years,
definitely going to be a big
years.
One. Yeah. Years. This one's going to be real positive. Super nothing cool. But positivity from us.
An upper, like up your ass upper? All right, bad joke.
No, like drugs.
I mean, I
like drugs.
No, like
I've heard
drugs.
You can shoot things up your buttholes, but.
All right.
That's up to our listeners, Blake. I'm making no judgment here.
Yeah. And wearing the no fascism shirt, John Anderson.
Actually, it says no racism, but that too. That'd be dope if it said no fascism.
Oh, I
mean,
thought
I
that
have
said
an
racism.
Anti-fascism shirt that I
underneath that hoodie.
But this actually.
Well, no racism is also great.
And it's particular in hockey. Although you know, in all contexts, we should eliminate racism. But this is particular. About hockey and shout out to playersagainsthate.com or hashtag or whatever it is. Google it. They do good stuff on Twitter. So,
nice.
Yes.
Nice.
High five.
John's inner hockey coming out, slipping it in always.
I mean,
what's your
inner, outer, whatever. But in these times of uncertainty that we live in, I think it's good to look towards our elders. For
oh my God.
You know what to do in times of chaos, and one of those that I look to is Cicero from the Roman Republic. Another one, deep cut here, Pompey. Another one to look at, less cool than Cicero, but still excellent. And I have to say, guys, both of them were born in 106 BC.
Oh God!
Oh wow!
Oh,
of course.
Wow.
Of course.
Very nice, Jeff. Very
that.
Nice, yeah.
Cicero, January 3rd, and Pompey, September 29th.
That's right, Cicero, yeah.
Cicero's my boy. Hell yeah, Cicero. Although he was complicated, he was a little, like, pedantic, I think you can say.
He would have done well in these times.
But, you know.
Yeah, Pompey's kind of complicated, too.
Pompey's super complicated, first triumvirate.
Yeah,
and
to discuss Roman Republican. Yeah.
Oh, I want to talk about
the
Pythagoras
Republic.
Right now. Getting to the Greeks. Getting to Pythagoras.
Whoa.
Come on.
Getting
well,
did
more
know,
than just create a triangle theory. Just telling you. Did more than that.
I thought that's all he did. He just sat there and drew triangles in the sand, right? That was it?
It would have been enough. But
he came up with a theory.
He actually traveled to Egypt and helped build the pyramids.
Interesting.
That's not true.
No, that timeline is incorrect. But it was a good draft.
I was gonna let the guardrails run with it.
We gotta
take him on his word.
Yeah, those were like the psychedelic mushroom guardrails from Mario.
Yeah,
Rainbow Road, baby.
What? On that note, I'm your Rainbow Road host, Blake Mannion. Hello.
Yes. Yes.
It's Tuesday, March 10th, 6:06 p.m. Wait, for those of you listening in the future.
It's Super Tuesday.
Oh, my God.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. You're welcome, world. I'm out. I'm done. All right,
and we will be removing John from the conversation now.
Edit it out. God.
Nice having you, John.
I stole that from someone on Twitter who I forget that I can no longer credit, but I will say that that was not my joke. But it's great.
So what brings us here today, gentlemen? A little coronavirus.
I was going to say social distancing.
This is podcasting.
Right.
We're getting a lot of spikes in our listeners because podcasting is still safe as far as we know.
I was thinking super about true. That. Yeah.
You can sit in your house and listen to podcasts all day long.
In fact, totally that said, if you're listening to this podcast and you are at a good moment, you should stop everything you're doing and go wash your hands.
Wash your hands.
That's right.
Don't touch your face.
And even though if you're listening to this in the future, after 60% of the people on the planet are dead because of the coronavirus, we're sorry we're such idiots when it comes to epidemiology.
Yeah. And then we're making jokes about it. But let me tell you, the memes have been great. I just want to let you know. The memes have been great.
In this stage of the crisis, we're still having.
So we're going to talk some coronavirus. We're going to talk Super Tuesday the 2nd.
Tuesday.
It is another day of primary votes. So we have some results rolling in here shortly, which we will get to cover live for us, but not live for you once you listen to this podcast episode.
Podcasting.
You're going to get our hot takes, though. And then you're going to be like, wow, how wrong they were. Jesus.
Yep. Well, remember like two episodes ago when we wrote off Biden?
Yeah.
And they're still coming back. So
you know what? Maybe we can revisit that a little bit later.
Yeah.
With some more. I wouldn't say that we were writing him off necessarily in the primary altogether, but
okay.
I think we were talking personal opinions.
Yeah, I'll let me. I was writing him off. I will take responsibility for that.
I just don't like creepy Uncle Joe, so probably me too.
Mm-hmm.
Oh no! Okay, preview.
Yeah, Tyler, I know you have some words about that. I know you have some words about that.
We'll hold them. Let's talk about coronavirus.
Everybody panic!
Panic. Oh, man.
Panic. Everybody panic.
Panic coronavirus.
I mean, it does seem like there is quite a bit of panic going on, widespread, in this country, around the world.
Yes, I
feel like it's the wrong kind of panic. Like, I don't want to say that it's not important to pay attention, because, like, obviously, there have been many of these things in the history of the world. There's many pandemics, and I don't want to say it's not important to have some level of like caution, but I feel like it's that thing where people are just panicking about the wrong things. Like people are, you know, toilet paper is sold out. It's like, okay, but like, you know, you can always wipe your hand with your ass. Like maybe you should like focus on other things that you
mean your ass yeah. with your hand.
That's right.
I mean, part of it is like we. In any kind of crisis, the worst thing you can do is actually panic. And, like, the number one rule is stay calm and rational. And we should all do that. But also, on the other side, like, I think the people who are like, this is basically the flu. You know, we went through this with MERS or whatever it was.
SARS.
And, well, no, there was two of them.
Oh, MERS, that's right.
There was an M. Yeah, there was an M and there was SARS. And so, like, fuck it, I'm sure this won't be a thing either, and, like, if it is, who gives a fuck, and, you know, blah, blah, blah. But, like, this could be bad. And people are like, oh, well, it's only 1% death rate or whatever. Well, that's 37 million Americans if you do 1% of the American population. So, like, that's a big, big, big fucking deal, right? So...
Right. If every single person...
If every single person got sick. Which we're not seeing. But the thing that, like, for me right now, the whole ballgame is what they're calling flattening the curve. So let's assume that there are 60% of people who are going to get sick. If all of us 60% got sick at one time, we would be fucked. Because the hospitals cannot deal with that. And we know some relatively high percentage of people are going to need to go to the hospital. So what we want to do is we want to take that the top of that spike and we want to push on it downwards so that those people get sick over as much time as possible so that the hospitals will have the capacity to deal with the kind of with the people.
Right.
And so,
well, and I mean, if 60% were infected at one time, then you're not contained. And
yeah, then you're going
to be impossible to really contain it right anywhere.
So what we're talking about, the way to flatten the curve is to do social distancing practices, to do all the things that you're hearing, to wash your hands, to, if you're sick, stay home. If you're sick, fucking stay home. Stay home if you can, if possibly you can. And I saw Jared Polis, Colorado governor, came out and said that sick leave would be given to anybody quarantined in Colorado, I believe.
It's employees of the Colorado system are given it. Yeah. He was also trying to urge private companies to give out more sick days as well.
Right.
As a way to kind of say, hey, we're all in this together. Please think about more than just your bottom line and give people extra sick days if they need it over the next however long it takes to contain this thing.
And I think that's like the biggest point overall is, and I know this is going to be like hard for America right now, but we're all going to need to do a little bit of sacrificing for each other, you know? So that means like, if you need to stay home, stay home. And that means maybe your boss like giving you your paycheck, even if you don't have paid sick leave officially. That also means, you know, like we're going to have a childcare crisis in this country, very likely. So everybody's going to need to pitch in on making sure that, like, you know, kids are taken care of, stuff like that. We're going to need to forgo events that we really like doing for a little while, probably.
Right. Potentially.
Yeah.
I'm still not necessarily in the camp that all of the extreme social measures need to happen. I think it's a good idea to think about them at this point and certainly prepare yourself for them. But I don't think it needs to be like a tomorrow thing, has to start happening, a lockdown like there is in Italy type thing.
No, and that's not what I'm saying. Or at least I guess.
It sounded like that's what you were saying.
What is the in Italy, like they've locked down the northern section of Italy, right? What is the...
No, that's the whole country now.
Oh, the whole country's on lockdown. Okay, so yeah. The whole country's on lockdown. Mm-hmm. But what is the percentage of people who have caught the virus now? Is there, like, population?
I mean, that's part of the problems we don't know. So right now, the official case is, according to the Johns Hopkins dashboard, 10,149 with 631 deaths in Italy thus far. The thing that's very concerning about Italy right now is that there's a lot of reporting that the hospitals, especially in northern Italy, are totally overwhelmed.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
And so there are a lot of, what happens is there's like 80% of the hospital is now, and that's a guess number, but it is that relatively high. Is now dealing with only coronavirus cases. That means all of the regular operations that the hospital normally does, they're not doing anymore. So the knock-on effects, really, or at least they don't have a high enough capacity to deal with like they were dealing with. So the knock-on effects of this become pretty scary as the volume gets really high. And that's what we're seeing in Italy right now. So we need to be vigilant about that possibility happening at a local level in the United States. Right. I'm not saying that's going to be universally what's happening to 100% of Americans, and I'm not saying that's going to happen tomorrow. I'm saying we need to be prepared for other cases that we're seeing around the world in countries that are analogous to us, like Italy.
Yeah, and we're paying attention because the Bay Area is one of the places where it's starting to kick up. It's not like it is in Seattle or anything, but specifically the South Bay is increasing, the amount of cases is increasing rapidly. And that's what we saw in Italy as well. We saw the amount of confirmed cases increase extremely quickly. And so that's mm-hmm. the other thing that I think is because of the lack of information, the lack of testing kits, all these things. You know, people are like, well, it's not that bad, it's not that many. But the thing is, we don't really know. We don't actually know. Also, like the first, from all intents and purposes, when I've heard of someone, you know, folks like us, people, if you're in your, you know, middle age, you know, your middle age, basically, you're not young and you're not considered elderly and you're relatively healthy and you don't have any other forms of immunocompromisation, you're basically going to get, like, the first symptom that has been reported is you get just a fever. You actually don't get anything else. So people could just, and then it goes away and then it comes back and it gets worse. So that's what they found. So the thing is, like, there could be so many people who actually like, oh, I don't feel great. Oh, I feel fine. Well, I'm good. And they actually have it and don't know. So like, that's the one thing. Also, it seems that there's some sort of a, there's a spike and we don't know if it's because it's spreading faster, exactly how that's happening. But, you know, the, so like, there's just care in the general. There's also like the herd, it's like the same concept as vaccines. Like, if we all are cautious, even if we're not those who are sort of slightly at, or, you know, the most at risk, we're protecting the rest of our community, which is really important.
Agreed.
And then the other thing that's really,
I think that, I think that's the most important thing.
Yeah.
Currently,
right. So we're like, oh, I'm just going to get sick. It's, and I'm like, it's not about
number
you.
Number one is that is everybody being conscious.
It's
right.
Not about and then,
right. And then number, that's number one. And then number two is the preparedness for potential future increases.
Yes.
And as it, if it got worse and got to endemic or pandemic levels, that's, we want to be thinking about that now, of course.
Yeah.
But it's not an open invitation that everybody needs to go out and buy all the hand sanitizer they can get their hands on tomorrow.
You can make that shit yourself.
Like, that's not what we're advocating.
No, that's just
pour
that's
liquor on your hands. And pour 101 on your hands. It's fine.
There you go. And also, that's one of the things of, like, don't panic. What we're talking about, like, that's one of the things not to panic about is, like, oh my god, I need all the masks in the world. Actually, you don't, and you should inform yourself that it's not going to help you not get sick. And all of the medical professionals really need it. So stop buying masks.
Yeah.
Stop buying masks. Stop buying hand sanitizer. Those are things that you are not hoarding. And you're actually going to make it worse if you're hoarding it.
Yeah.
So, like, make sure you have all of your essentials for 14 days. But don't hoard a bunch of, like, medical supplies that the rest of people who are probably more vulnerable than you are going to need.
Yeah. I think there's a few, I mean, you know, this is a political podcast as for all intents and purposes. So the parts of government politics that are interesting about this, I mean, there are numerous, right? There are numerous. There's one, we don't have socialized healthcare in this country. Will this become a talking point? And also, like, generally, we're going to see how much it sucks. Not, like, if this hits places hard when you don't have socialized healthcare. Also, like, democracy in general, we're seeing this in Italy right now, like, right, other places where they're, like, totalitarian governments can just be like, everybody stay home, and if you don't, we'll put you in jail, because they do that kind of thing. In democracies, there's a little, you can't just force people to stay in their homes, right? So there's, we have, it's, that's part of democracy, everybody, we all have to participate. So we all have to agree to the rules, but if things get bad, like, at what level will state and local governments start pushing back and making certain enforcements, right? Like, so for example, in the South.
Well, so.
Sorry, this. Yeah, it's happening. It's happening.
It's already, like, we saw that San Jose Sharks already, are probably going to be playing in front of nobody, right?
It's already a thing.
Exactly.
Well,
I mean, yeah, almost every professional sport association has now said that they're banning everybody from entering locker rooms, for coming into contact. But a lot of European soccer clubs are going to be playing in front of nobody. Like John said, the Sharks, you're probably going to see other California teams jump on board. My guess, the Kings, as well in the South. But
also, like, European hockey leagues are done. Some of that, like, I think the Swiss league is done.
Wow.
They played a couple games of their quarterfinals and they just shut down the season.
Right. They suspended it. Right.
Yeah. Yep. So we'll start to see that kind of thing too.
I actually think it's an interesting point that you brought up, Tyler, about, you know, the universal healthcare, right, and the response that's there. I actually think that hopefully, well, one, obviously, hopefully this isn't the type of thing that kills a bunch of people. Hopefully it's not that bad overall, right? But I think it's a great talking point for the Democratic ticket in general, you know, whoever ends up getting it. And then toward the fall, no matter what happens, unless this thing's completely contained and the current CDC plays a big role in it, I think that it probably helps the Democrats in the long run in this election cycle.
It could do. I think the other thing, and maybe we could pivot this, the other thing is, you know, presidents historically who have not, incumbent presidents who have not gotten reelected, historically one of the reasons for that is, the thing that they had in common was that the economy wasn't doing well. And this is tanking the economy right now. Yeah. It's not only tanking our economy,
the
it's
world
tanking
economy.
The world economy in various markets. Yeah. Invest in like anything online right now, basically.
Well, yeah, no kidding.
And that's
go ahead, Blake.
That's why part of the reason why Jared Polis put out his whole mess, his letter with his state of emergency address, I think was to just like bring some relief to the public. And to show and do that through like leadership.
Yeah.
Basically saying, hey, I'm your governor. I'm trying to free up some money to set up this standard so we can handle this situation, have the capacity to do it if it happens. And that's just really something you haven't seen from like not only the Democratic candidates running, but also like Trump. So yeah.
Likely going to need to see, because what we have right now is we have a supply problem, right? Which is like factories are shutting down so they can't make shit that people want, which isn't necessarily the worst thing for an economy. And like, you know, that's a fixable problem, basically. Mm-hmm. The thing that we're really concerned about is the supply problem turns into a demand problem. So, you know, the coronavirus becomes a really big deal and nobody wants to fly anymore. So that's not a supply problem. There are plenty of planes. The problem is that nobody wants to fly in them. And so,
right.
That,
yeah. The travel economy is going to get hit hard. Probably certain aspects of healthcare are going to get hit really hard by what we're talking about. If this is a long-term thing, other aspects won't of the economy, but.
Right. So that's the long-term danger, to the economy, is that this turns the supply problem into a demand problem, which could trigger a recession. So governments need to step in to make sure that demand continues. And there are mechanisms by which they can do that. But that's going to require a lot of leadership, which I don't have a lot of confidence in our national politics right now. But another point also, as far as like the like authoritarianism aspect of this goes, the United States is not only a democracy, but we're a like locally controlled country when it comes to health. So it's one of those 10th Amendment things where if it's not explicitly in the Constitution, it falls to states and localities. And so that's where it is with health. And so we are much less susceptible to authoritarianism with a crisis like this, even than other, you know, pseudo democracies like Italy. Because we are not federally controlled in the health sector like Italy is.
Mm-hmm. Right. I mean, you could potentially see state governments implement measures like something that you see in Italy because they have the power to do so, but probably not the federal government. In this crisis, locally here in Colorado, Jared Polis has more power than Donald Trump does in fighting it. It's as simple as that.
The federal government does have some powers to like step in, and I don't know exactly how that works, but it is not, they are not primary, and I'm sure they would have to like prove
right.
to some court that they had a reason for doing so.
They probably, in probably states where if it came down to like a financial burden of setting up some kind of response, basically it would be a plea to the CDC, hey, can you transfer more money to help us do A, B, and C, and the CDC would step in. It probably wouldn't be like a, hey, we're giving over control of everything, though there would be probably certain aspects of the care that was provided to those infected that would be handled by the CDC, something like that, if it got to that level.
I know, I'm trying to find my source. I was reading about it earlier. Vox said that there is some power for the federal government to, like, for the lack of a better term, deputize itself if localities are failing in their like basic responsibility.
Sure.
But I don't know.
I mean, you could still pass some kind of federal emergency, right? It could be an executive order from the president saying that I'm taking emergency procedures as the executive branch, that we're going to step in and do stuff because you're not capable of doing it on your own, which would probably be welcomed in certain locales if it got to that point, you know? And by the time the state, if they were really that, had that much of a problem with it, got around to suing the federal government about it, it would be down the road after the crisis was solved,
right.
Most likely.
Yeah,
right?
That's going to
be right, well, in this
effective thing.
And then, so like the other pieces, right? There's all those technicalities, and then it's also how it will be used politically, right? I mean, there's so many ways it can be used. It can be used by the right to through, you know, racism and fear mongering to stoke anti-Asian sentiments.
You've seen that narrative already.
Yes. Shutting down borders. Shutting down borders is as well. Yep. And yeah, you've seen it already, as we said, Kelly, with the anti-Asian sentiment. And then also, you know, it can be used by the left if you're for Medicare for all, right? You can use it as a talking point. Also, it can be used as something to talk about the economy and class, about how working class and poor people can't afford to not work. And so they're the ones who are more susceptible to it. And like, right, or if you're pro-union, you could say that, well, if the unions were stronger, they could declare that they will pay anybody who's staying home, right? Like, there's all these ways it can be used politically. And so as this, because it doesn't appear that this is going to be, like, this is going to happen or be unfolding, it appears, for at least probably the next 2 months at least.
I heard an interview today that we should plan more on like 6.
Right. Okay. Great. It's great. Yeah. Great. 6 months. So what does 6 months lead us to right from now? That leads us into September.
Yeah.
And that is only 2 months away from the election. So, yeah. I mean, right. It's going to be
a
talking
point.
What does that mean for the conventions? Oh, what does it mean for the conventions?
Because that's through the conventions.
Yep.
I'm really interested to see what turnout is going to be like tonight in the primary.
Yes. What's it doing to voting turnout?
Yeah, that's
Biden
really
and Bernie
interesting too.
Both canceled their campaign events tonight, their rallies. Right.
Yep. Canceled Ohio. Yeah. Yep. It's you know, and I'd like to make another point too, because I think you're talking about some really important, like, structural issues, right? When you talk about how it's going to affect the economy, class, race, important aspects of our democracy in general. And what could be really good about a situation like this is that it allows us to step back and reevaluate the important aspects of what our democracy is, because it puts certain aspects of it in threat and in positions where it could crumble easily. You know, we talk about the existential crisis that is Donald Trump to our institutions, right? But if we talk about a widespread health issue that can destroy our economy and kill 1 to maybe 6% of our population, that gets to a more fundamental discussion of what's important to our society, right? And that's when we get into the healthcare aspect. That's where we get into what's important about our economic measures and how our food is produced and how we interact with each other. And so, you know, hopefully in this whole thing, what we can do is, one, get through it without a whole lot of loss of life or damage. And then, two, learn from it so stuff like this doesn't necessarily have to be a kind of flash in the pan in the future, right? We come up with better ways to fight it going forward to stop a widespread panic and possible pandemic from happening again.
Mm-hmm. Right. Well,
hey, guess what? Biden won Mississippi and Missouri.
I know.
I was going to say the results just started coming in.
They called Mississippi and Missouri for Biden. Shablam.
Are you guys surprised?
No, at all.
No.
Me neither. Yeah.
And right, there'll be a split of delegates also given.
Yeah.
But
the percentage
that is in ways makes it harder for Bernie to ever overcome a minor lead. That's what happened in 2016. It's just, and that's actually what happened in 2008 too, is you get an early lead and then it just is insurmountable because it's proportional delegate allocation, whereas the Republicans are more hardcore and it's just you win, you get all the delegates. Shablam. You're done. So it's a little bit more hardcore. And there's pluses and minuses to each system. You know, there's not a better one. But yeah, it, you know, the 538 model has Biden at 99%, which should make everybody nervous about the model. But basically, we're at this point where there will be things that are what will affect the race. Is something that is not modelable right now. So, like, if one of them gets the coronavirus and it seriously affects their candidacy, right. That's going to affect the model. But if it, you know, that, how do you code for that? So, you know, yeah. So right now, if the state of the race continues, Biden is going to win.
Right. Yeah. Right. Bernie, I expected Mississippi to be heavily Biden the way that.
Yeah.
The last round of primaries went. Bernie really needed a strong showing in Missouri. So even if Biden wins Missouri, and depending on how much of the proportion he gets.
No, he won Missouri. They're calling Missouri.
They've already called it completely.
But Bernie does have 21% of the vote, so he'll get some delegates.
So he will get some delegates. That's what I'm saying, is that if he gets a strong showing in Michigan and wins Michigan, it's still possible that he could win the ticket. If he loses Michigan and only, say, wins Washington tonight, then it's a very much a long shot.
Yeah, and it's going to be interesting. I mean, you know, the thing to keep in mind, just, you know, we've talked about this a lot. There's narrative, right? Because before tonight, he was only down by, I think, less than 100 delegates, I think, which in the grand scheme is not a lot. Because there are like 3,000, right? But like to say, like, so we're looking at like what people are probably going to do in other states, right? Like, I think the point I'm trying to make here is that there is a large narrative of like, well, Biden's getting the nomination, because, which of course could be true because we have information that shows us these things. But what happens is confirmation bias inside of that. I've just seen a lot of people pushing back on that, where this narrative starts to run that it's already over, and it's the people who are like, yeah, I'd vote for Bernie, but I guess Biden's gonna win already, so I'm not gonna, I you know, it's poor and working class people, I can't afford to miss a day at work for this, so I'm gonna just not vote. I can't have time for this.
Let's talk about that. So this is a wider problem with our population and how we have decided to consume and understand the news, which is everybody's become a
But all right, I'll let you finish. I'm sorry. I'm also like, I think you're trying to be like, humans need to be better, and I'm like, the problem is humans. We can't.
No. So everybody's a pundit. So, and you saw this with, like, I think you saw this anyways, where everybody broke late for Biden. Like everybody who, almost everybody, it was a very high percentage of people who were late breakers broke for Biden. And I think a lot of that was because everybody was looking around going, are you going to vote for Biden? Because if you're going to vote for Biden, I'll vote for Biden. But like, if you're not, I don't think I want to vote for Biden. And it was this whole like prisoner's dilemma game that we're playing with each other. And I think a lot of that has to do with the pundification of the American citizen. So we all watch cable news and we're like, well, it looks like Biden's going to have this chance and Bernie's going to have this chance and blah, 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 blah. Right. And so I'm going to vote for whoever's going to have the best chance. And I think from my punditry analysis that that's going to be Biden or whatever. Instead of being like, I'm an American citizen who has interests in the way that my country is governed, and I think that Pete Buttigieg is going to be the best president, so I'm going to vote for him, regardless of what everybody else is thinking, because that's best for me. And I think that that is what citizens should be doing. And that was the vision of the founders, was that we're going to be making that decision. Instead, we are all trying to be pundits and all trying to figure out what all of us are going to do, because we're all trying to look at the polling and the blah, 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 and whatever. And I think it's a huge problem in America. It drives me nuts. Now,
so people need to be better.
People just don't want to be wrong, actually. Okay, yeah, I think people. Is what it is.
But people need to be better. But the other solution is just, as we've talked about before, just have the entire primary on one day.
Yes.
Right.
That would solve a
that
lot
would
of
solve
the problem.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, it would.
Yep.
Yes,
yep.
It would.
That would go
none of this. I mean, it's ridiculous to have like Iowa be the first stop. I mean, not only do you have, you know, the technological issues that have happened the last couple times, which have made them into kind of a mockery on the national scene, but, you know, a small state that's relatively homogenous is going to decide the front runner for it. I mean, it's not a death sentence for a candidate to not win Iowa, obviously, or New Hampshire for that matter. But I agree. I like the idea of having one day primary. It'd be very interesting to see how people fall.
And the punditry point, I don't mean just for the primary. I mean this for political analysis generally in America. I see this all over. Now, let's have some self-awareness. We are being pundits right now.
Currently,
right now. But like in my personal life, I've honestly started to, you know, people are like, you know, who's going to win the primary? Blah, 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 pundit question. And I go, I am a pundit 1 or 2 hours a week on my podcast, and you can listen for my pundit opinions on that. Otherwise, ask me who I think is going to be the best president. I will have that discussion with you. But I am not going to have the, like, oh, who's going to win, blah, 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 blah. Stop it. It's ruining our brains. It is legitimately ruining our democracy, and we all need to stop and start being citizens again. So I did, like, that was a good time. I don't know how much we've talked about that on the podcast, but it is like one of my main gripes right now with our society. And I just wanted to like plant my flag in that shit.
Yeah. You see it with Elizabeth Warren.
I think
we've
iterated it different ways.
Yeah. You see it with Elizabeth Warren. Like, I think she, if there's a primary, she would have got a far higher showing because people are just like, well, she's not electable. Yeah. What the fuck does that mean? Well, why do you think that though? Because you're punditrying around some shit. Like, just if
and
you think,
I was fully guilty of doing that with Elizabeth Warren too.
Yeah, I mean,
that's pretty much why she didn't get my vote. You know?
Yeah, well, it's why I voted for Hillary last time. You know, in the primary was that same reason because I was like, well, I don't know, I don't think Bernie Sanders can do the thing, and it'll be good. Blah blah blah.
I thought Hillary would have been a really good president.
I think Hillary would have been a good president too, but I still think.
But, and I think she would have been a better president than Bernie by like a whole lot.
Yeah, I mean,
I actually agree with you as well.
Most likely. Yeah. Can we talk about that now? I was giving
you the transition. I was throwing the ball up for you.
Yes.
So yes, yeah. Tyler has some words about
Tyler
this.
Has some thoughts. Also, I would like to maybe a little bit apologize to Bernie voters because I was kind of mean to them on the last podcast a little bit, slightly. So my bad, but I'm probably going to make the same mistake on this podcast. So let's do it.
Here we go. Okay.
That was the most half-hearted apology I think I've ever heard.
Okay, so.
I'm sorry, not really, but yeah, it's going to happen again.
Yeah. It's not how apologies work.
Basically, I'm like acknowledging my awareness around it, I guess.
You're acknowledging that it wasn't great and you don't care. All right.
Anyways, let's do it. Let's go.
Here's what I was disagreeing with. I don't want to agree about who would be a better president. That I don't necessarily disagree about. Like, I think that's the core question that we need to be asking, you know, when we're doing now. I actually think that in this moment, and I know you even said, you're like, you, John, I'm speaking to you, you said that you were like, well, yes. I side more with the moderate wing of the Democratic Party. But I side more with the progressive part of the Democratic Party. There is a realignment going on, but here is the point I want. You were saying, well, you know, we need to like keep the party whole, but what I think, and like, you know, there's a party realignment happening. I think though, that's what's an unfortunate reality is that the Democratic Party continuing to side with moderates. Here's the thing: what Democrats and Republicans share is that in our country, right? Obviously, we can look at this different from Europe. Is that economically they're virtually indistinguishable from European standards? Okay, they're virtually all capitalist and varying degrees of centrists. With varying degrees of regulation, but really not much. Okay, so really, what that creates is it comes down to the social policies. That's what voters really, because economically, honestly, they always talk about it and they say it's economic stupid, and of course that is true. However, actually, how much is different in their policies is very limited. They talk a big game a lot, but actually, the type of economic changes that they make is really relatively small if you look at other Western democracies. What really sets them apart ideologically is on social issues, right? That's what divides the two parties.
Yeah, social is 100%.
Social are the big parties, right? So what the Democratic Party has an opportunity to do here, in if they were to nominate Bernie, and this is in terms of also who would make the best president in a certain way, who would be most effective in actually getting things through the Senate, that I'm like, yeah, I don't know, or through the House and the Senate. I don't know if Bernie would be good at that at all. I actually think he might be terrible at it. However, the part that I think that he could really be effective with is actually bringing forth economics and making it very clear that there's a big difference between the Democrats and Republicans in this, if the Democratic Party was to go that direction in progressivism. And what you're activating there is a huge amount, and what you could potentially get, because you're saying, well, there's a bunch of people on the last episode, well, we're not going to get these people in the Democratic Party. But actually, I think there's a large swath of people, poor and working class people, who economics is more important to them than a lot of the social issues. Like, they're like, y'all on the coasts want to fight about gender identity and shit? Like, it doesn't affect me. Where it actually does affect them, but they don't think it affects them. And so economics is actually, and so if there was to be, but basically, because there's so little difference, they end up voting on the social policies, because that actually then takes precedent, because those are more distinguishable than the economic policies. Versus things like Medicare for all, versus things like, you know, if unions were stronger, right, and there was big support, that would create a stark, it could, I'm not saying it would necessarily, I'm not an expert, but it could create a stark enough difference that you'd actually be recruiting a lot of more people to the Democrat, poor and working class white people specifically, to the Democratic Party.
I think that if any Democratic candidate could accurately portray a strong economic message that had some types of governmental support and protectionism that are key in some progressive pushes in the economic circle, could completely win over poor white people. I do, Tyler. I'm 100% with you, but it's about packaging that deal in an understandable way. And that's a difficult thing. And I think that's where a lot of where my hesitation with a candidate like Bernie comes in, because when you toss around the term socialist, it goes past a lot of the policies that Bernie is even talking about, but it scares people, right? And I know people make this point, and I'm not 100% sure how much. I think this is really what we're I think that term scares middle-aged and older people more. I think our generation's a lot more comfortable with that term not being a boogeyman type term. But there really is some strong policies that could happen that could really help poor working rural white people, and that could bring them in. But
question,
it's all about messaging.
What effect do we think that the president, who is the on the presidential ticket, has on Senate races? So what effect, if any, does the top of the ticket have on Senate races?
Well, I mean, I just know that people are more likely to be incentivized to go to the ballot box by who's running for voting, who they want to vote for president. And they will tick the box that matches their party
and
for the other
inverse
thing.
Of that is true as well, right?
Yes, so as far as I understand.
Yes. So if you look at the Senate races up right now, in 2020, let me make sure I'm reading this correctly. You have, I think, primarily races in the South and Midwest. I think it's a very lean Republican Senate map. Like, more Republican senators are up than Democratic senators. So,
Right. There's one here in Colorado.
Yeah, there's one here in Colorado. I mean, if I'm reading this correctly on 270 to win, it's like basically the entire South, minus Florida. But, you know, California, no. Washington, no. Nevada, no. Pennsylvania, no. New York, no. Connecticut, no. Vermont, no. Wisconsin, no. You know, none of those states have Senate races, but Texas, right. Oklahoma, Arizona, Nebraska, South Dakota, Wyoming, you know. So basically, Tyler, I take your point generically for the United States. But I think that if the the question is, you know, how can we get the most progressive agenda through? I think it is, we need senators. We don't need presidents, right?
Yeah. And obviously, the president can't just pass laws by himself unilaterally.
Right. Constitution. And so, and if you look at the senators that are up in 2020, I think Biden gives us a more, a better advantage in those states as far as like turnout goes than Bernie would, considering the breakdown of those states.
Probably in the South. Yeah. Yeah. And you're probably right in the Midwest too.
Yeah. So,
that's a good point.
Also, a couple of things. I disagree. I think that there is a pretty, so like in, you know, 2004, 1996 or something like that, you didn't see that extreme of an economic difference between the parties, and you did see a much more like social battleground as far as the elections went. But I think in the Trump era, there's a fairly stark difference between the two parties on most issues. But economics, you know, I think it is pretty clear that like you have Medicare for all on one side, and then you have tax breaks for billionaires on another side. And I think that there's like some clarity there. Also, as far as like social issues go,
I'm saying Biden doesn't support Medicare for all. So I'm saying my point is just that will not be a point that you can make in terms of economics if he becomes the nominee. That was my point.
That economics will be a push. So, you know, I mean, Bernie's got some interesting social issues as well, right? Like, especially on guns.
He's really
conservative on guns.
Yes.
And so really conservative relative to his positions and whatever. So if we're fighting social issues and we're trying to make a clear distinction, you know, it's not clear to me that Bernie does that in all cases. But, you know, again, on the other side of that, we have the, like, he's a socialist problem, right? And so I think culturally, like, there will be a fair divide there.
Yeah.
But again, you know, the goal here is that we have a progressive agenda because we think as human beings and as citizens, that will be the best for, like, the most Americans, right? I think we can...
Right, the most amount of people.
Yeah. which is a pretty utilitarian worldview, but I think we're all pretty much there. And to me, we have to win Senate races. That's the ball game. And so if that's the ball game, then I think, you know, Biden ends up being a better candidate for that. And we have, you know, I think there's a really valid argument that the Democrats always like move to the middle, and over the course of time that moves us further and further to the right. And we have seen that, you know, since basically the 60s. But the energy in the Democratic Party is on the left. And the energy in the Democratic Party is going to be in Congress, I think, regardless of who the president is, if a Democrat is elected. And so, therefore, we need to be more focused on getting senators and Congress people elected than the president per se.
Yeah. Hmm. Yeah. And, It's not an incorrect point. I don't think you're wrong. I think, you know, we're playing the three-dimensional chess, which we said that we will try to not do, but we all end up doing. True. But Kelly brought up a good point of also that it's, you know, it's the older, you know, it's the older generations. And so it can also just be, who are less, comfortable with the term socialism and things like that. And it's just younger people who are more progressive generally. So, you know, and to bring us full circle, there has not been one case of someone who has symptoms from the coronavirus in below age 9. And so it's just possible that this is just the world's way of just thinning the boomer herd a little bit for us here.
Oh, no.
You're going to get us
canceled on boomer Facebook, because I'm sure we're really talking
about
that.
I'm not serious.
Yeah, that's our key demographic, I'm pretty sure. So,
sorry,
boomers on Facebook?
I know.
That's my ballgame. Boomers on Facebook who are voting for Bernie is like the person I want to hang out with. Oh my god.
Man. Just felt like bringing it full circle for us there. You know?
Thank you, Tyler.
Also, Biden with 16.5%, and according to the Washington Post, in Michigan, Biden is winning 53-41, 42.
Yeah.
Ooh, close.
So, yeah.
Close. It is close.
I mean, if Bernie doesn't win Michigan, it's going to be a very tough road for him.
It's only 17% reporting, so
yeah,
a lot can change.
It's pretty early. Wow.
Well, we'll be following that the rest of the evening.
Yeah, check in for live updates. Just kidding, because it's a podcast.
On that note.
Well, yeah. On that note, thanks everybody for listening.
Was I right? Did we do a positive episode? Was that all uppers? Is that good?
Yeah, coronavirus.
I mean, really I positive, feel high right? shit right now. So
it was pretty. We're doing good. It was pretty close.
Nice.
Uppers.
Yeah. Uppers.
Nice.
Drug references.
That's
Yay,
awesome.
Well, podcast. All right.
Thank you, everybody, for listening. Please leave us a review if you feel so inclined.
Hell yeah! Register to vote. Talk to people who you know who are not registered to vote and be like, yo, you should register to vote. Important.
The plan. The
plan. Godspeed. Look towards our elders for
oh my God.
What to do in times of chaos.